Well, for those of you that tune in each and every week, you've realized we've started off the show slightly differently. And that's because we've just lost one of the greatest musicians in the world, one of the greatest lyricists, and certainly one of the most influential artists within the Christian music scene. At this very moment, a public memorial ceremony for Larry Norman is underway at the Church on the Hill in Oregon, just south of Salem. And I tell you, this guy had a huge impact on many, many people around the world. I mean, the list of names is endless. The tributes have just been absolutely pouring in. If you haven't heard of Larry Norman, you want to stay with us, because about 3:45 today, we are going to air the first half of a two-hour interview we did with Larry a couple of years ago. I mean, it was just, it was the highlight of my career, just being able to chat with Larry Norman for that long. So you want to tune in about 3:45 here on the Drew Marshall Show for the first part of our two-part interview with Larry Norman. But before we get to all that, we got to get a hold of a couple of people who I think could probably do a good tribute to Larry Norman, much better than I could. The first person we're going to go with is probably one of the wildest cats I know in the music scene. He is definitely a blast from the past for many of us. Brian Duncan, folks. Do you remember him? Sweet Comfort Band. He still has some of the best pipes out there. I was down in Nashville a couple of years ago, and I was sitting there with a couple of musicians, and we were listening to Brian sing. And we just turned to each other and went, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? This guy can still absolutely blow people away. Brian, thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, it's good to be here. I'm glad you called me.
Well, we lost him.
Yeah, last time I saw him was almost a year and a half ago, and you know, I thought it was really interesting. As over the years, I could sing you more of his songs than probably any Christian artist that I know. But I remember last time I saw him was in Toronto, up in your neighborhood.
Really?
In the airport, and he was just sitting on a, it looked like a park bench, and he's just sitting there waiting for a plane, just like me. Going, we all get the same experience on some level. It's what you do with it after that, but.
Yeah, really.
I remember him even then just saying, man, I'm just tired all the time, looking forward to going home. Hmm. He was talking about going back to Oregon, but this is the first time that I'd ever had a chance to just, well, we're just sitting there like a couple of old men on a park bench.
Well, what, I mean, do you remember first hearing Larry Norman's music?
You know, I don't remember the exact, it seemed like it was ubiquitous, you know, in the early Christian days. You know, nobody ever came in behind him and did what he was doing. Lyrically, he was addressing the world in a way, and talking about Jesus in a way that made sense, whether you had any background or affiliation with Christians in the past. And he talked in a way that he seemed to be addressing things more firsthand than. I don't know exactly what it is about him. You know, even the song Outlaw, talking about Jesus and putting it in some kind of terminology that made you want to go, wow, I'd like to know him. I don't think anybody's done anything quite like that since either.
I mean, is it fair to call him the godfather of Christian rock? I mean, that first album, was it 69, I think, where it just kind of took the world by storm and created a lot of waves. I mean, dude, you're a guy who creates a heck of a lot of waves, but I think Larry Norman paved the way for you to wave a lot more, if that made any sense whatsoever.
No, he was around before there was even a genre of Christian music. There was no such thing. There was no labels. And the thing about watching him live is you never knew what he was going to say, and it was always going to smack you in the face. You know, and it came at you kind of sideways. You never got the impression that he had an agenda, you know, some kind of undercurrent, and that you didn't have to have some kind of you know, pre-read before you'd listen to him deliver stuff. So, and of course, the first song I heard of his was, he wasn't even singing, it was somebody else that was massacring one of his songs. It's called I Wish We'd All Been Ready. I think I saw that early film that was just horrendously awful. But you know, I guess that's when you know you've you've made an impact is when somebody else is massacring your song.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I'm sure many people have done that with some of your tunes, Brian. I mean, seriously, I can still remember that night. You were just pumping it out in Nashville during GMA week a couple of weeks ago, and there were about three or four of us just standing around. We all looked at each other at the same time with our jaws open and went, "Are you kidding me?"
Well, you know, I say that all the time. After my show, I'm going, "Are you kidding me? What the heck was I thinking?" Yeah, I tend to call it from the line of scrimmage, and you know, that's the one thing that I like about performing and not running it like a script. And Larry Norman was certainly the classic example of somebody who didn't follow a script of any kind. And you know, my hat's off to his efforts, and he'll be sorely missed. The scary thing is that generations pass in a heartbeat, and I think it's not the numbers of people that show up at your memorial. It's the type of people that show up.
Yeah.
It's the people that you influenced who are still influencing, and I would imagine that there would be some key people that have earned their own respect, you know, in Christian music and in other circles and writing, you know. I think that says a lot. It's like what an old Indian thing said, you know, that you were respected according to the largeness of your enemy, and how big your enemy was, you know, was what really spoke to your own credibility. And
Brian, if you had one more opportunity to sit beside Larry Norman on a park bench at the airport, what would you say to him?
I love you, man. That's basically it. I think I said that to him then. You know, we were just talking about how good it feels to be somewhere where you're known and return to the familiar. He was just talking about going home from the gigs. He just says, "Man, I'm tired all the time. I'm going. I relate."
You can.
And I think he I don't know if he even got how much he was loved.
Brian Duncan, it has been an absolute pleasure to talk with you. It's been way too long, man. We got to catch up again soon.
Yeah, you know, I'm at a motorcycle event here in Southern California on a rainy day. There's like 400 motorcycles in the parking lot. Maybe we could ride out to Toronto.
Good luck getting through the snow, let me tell you.
Oh, yes. You guys don't have California weather. I forgot.
No, that's right. That's right. Hey, Brian, we'll catch up again soon, man. Good to chat with you.
Yeah, say hello to, you know, the rest of the guests. I know all those guys, Phil and Randy, and I love them too.
Good stuff. Brian Duncan on the Drew Marshall Show. Thanks, mate.
You bet. See ya.
Bye-bye. Well, we're doing our tribute here to Larry Norman, and of course, that was Brian Duncan. You'll remember him with the Sweet Comfort Band, and just on his own, what an incredible solo career. His voice is still stunningly unbelievable. We're going to play you some of Larry's tunes, and when we come back from this song, we're going to chat with Phil Keaggy. Easily one of the most amazing guitar players in the world, folks. And humble. I mean, it just goes hand in hand with his gifting. Larry Norman singing in the background, The Outlaw. One of his most unbelievable songs. I think it's been covered more than any of the other ones.
A sorcerer, a man of mystery. He could walk upon the water. He could make a blind man see. That he conjured wine at weddings and did tricks with fish and bread. That he talked of being born again and raised people from the and he bowed to no decree, and they feared his strength and power, so they nailed him to a tree. he came to be a servant and to set us free from sin. And that's who I believe he was, 'cause that's who I believe. And I think we should get ready, 'cause it's time for us to
You are listening to The Drew Marshall Show, and we are in the middle of our Larry Norman tribute. Of course, just this past Sunday, we lost one of the most influential recording artists ever. Larry Norman, a pioneer of Christian rock, died at the age of 60, which is hard to believe because he's been around for so long. I mean, he's been struggling with his bad heart for forever, it seems like. Norman's first solo record, 1969 release upon this rock, is considered the first Christian rock album, folks. So are you getting the picture? Many of you don't even know who Larry Norman is, and that's what we want to do today, is kind of bring to your lives Larry Norman, who he is and what kind of influence he's had. And today we're hearing from a few of the Christian music icons that I would consider on par with Larry Norman, and this is one of them, Mr. Phil Kagi, another gentleman I've admired for many, many years. Phil, you were on our show, man, I think about 4 years ago, and good to have you back again.
Thanks, Drew. It's good to be with you, and it's great to spend time in appreciation for what Larry has done, what he's contributed, and what he stood for as an artist and as a Christian.
I just got off the phone with Brian Duncan, and I asked him if he remembered, you know, sort of the first time he heard the Larry Norman stuff. Mm-hmm. Can you think back that far and kind of go, yeah, I remember when I hooked into his tunes real good.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I met Larry Norman and Randy Stonehill at the same time the first day, I had met both of them was July 1971. I was doing a concert with my band Glass Harp in an outdoor event in Ohio, and I think what the weather postponed the concert. I think it ended up being in a building later on in the night. But I hung out with them at the hotel, and you could just tell that, you know, me growing up in Ohio and those guys coming from the West Coast, you could really tell that. They were different, and this was new, you know, and they were literally the first two Christian musicians that were rockers that I had met. 2 years later, I met the guys in Love Song and toured with them, and on it goes from there. But it was Larry Norman and Randy Stonehill who were the first legitimate, true rockers who loved Jesus and loved singing about him and weren't ashamed of him. And just they were themselves, and they were both very prolific writers. It's almost as if like Larry introduced me to Randy, and then Randy introduced me to Larry, and we've all been friends ever since.
Did you ever cover one of his tunes?
No, I have played them in concert here and there over the years.
But never laid one down?
I never did, but I'm thinking about doing so. I got to tell you, yesterday I spent like 3 hours. I'd gone over some concert tapes that I have. In March 2004, which was 4 years ago this month, I did a concert up in Pleasant Valley, Oregon, and Larry showed up unannounced. I was in intermission, and my sound man, you know, this gives you an idea. My sound man says, "Who are you?" You know, I was busy writing or reading something.
Yeah.
And I looked up, and he had snuck in like a mouse, Larry, and he was sitting there just with that Cheshire cat grin on his face and just looking at me going, "Hey." And we got visiting. I recorded some of our conversation, which was a lot about what happened to him, how he became ill, cayenne pepper, which is something I always enjoy putting over my food, and he liked using it because he said it made him feel better than the medicine the doctors prescribed. And then he also talked about Mark Hurd, his passing. He talked about Rich Mullins. And it seemed like he knew that he was close to leaving this planet. You know, it just seemed like it. But you know, I'd known that he was really struggling and he was weak at times. And but he came up on stage in my second set, and we played for about 15, 16 minutes together. We did together. I Wish We'd All Been Ready, Fool's Wisdom, Here Comes the Sun and Jesus Is Just All Right with Me. And it was so full of humor and so full of lightheartedness and camaraderie. And I made a recording of that, and we'll probably do a podcast featuring that wonderful segment. The quality is wonderful. The humor is there. The audience absolutely loved Larry, seeing him up on stage singing. And then I also got an email from a good friend, Tony, who is the manager of Moya Brennan and Delirious. And Larry, just a few weeks ago, had done a recording. It was his last recording, and I just haven't heard it yet, but I have it in my email. So even to the very last, he was actually creative and prolific and encouraging to other people.
The unpredictability of the man on stage was what kept everybody on edge. I mean, whether it was making some smart crack about the sound man, or I remember at People's Church in Toronto, they put red lights up on stage, you know, and he did that whole, wait a second, this is church. Are we supposed to have red lights?
Oh, I know. He loved to go against the grain. And that's one of the things that attracted, you know, our generation to him. He could be himself. He was like, in a sense, the true voice of Jesus, like Dylan was the voice of, you know, that his time. And, I mean, he was the real thing. I mean, and you could tell you were in the presence of somebody who was smart, creative, and passionate for what he believed in, delivering it with a real punch and simplicity. I mean, the guy never used anything other than, for the most part, just a classical guitar and a mic in front of it, as if it were the 50s and the 60s. And
sort of channeling Joan Baez, you know.
Oh yeah. but he had a style and a rock and a groove. And, you know, he and I never had any run-ins because we never worked that close together in terms of, like, a real commitment. He did invite me to put my very first debut album, What a Day, on his One Way Records back in 1973. But those plans just didn't work out that way, and it went to a different small record company. But the fact that he loved it, and that's the first time I ever heard the word showcase, believe me, he'd say, I'd really like to showcase your album.
Oh, that was perfect. Say it again.
I'd really like to showcase your album on my label, One Way Records. And, of course, I can do Brian Duncan, too. But you have to have a sarcastic, you know, attitude.
Oh, that's classic. I didn't know you could do this.
Hello there. This is Randy Stonehill. How are you? Anyway, no. I do impressions of my brothers, too. You know, they're not famous people.
Oh, man.
But they have characters.
Do
and
they?
Voices.
Right.
Yeah. But anyway, back to Larry. He's, you know, the thing about our hope that we have as believers is that this place called heaven, or being taken into, you know, the arms of the Father, is a reality. And people who really walk with Jesus and know him and have struggled and have fought the fight, fought the good fight, they know. You know, I was sensing that Larry just really knew he was ready, and he was ready to meet his maker. God bless him. 60 years is not too long to live when you think about it.
No.
It's only six groups of 10 years, and this month I'm 57. So a lot of my friends, you know, I've said goodbye to a lot of friends this past year.
Hmm.
Bruce Barr, there was Roby Duke, and Jackie Street, bass player that I toured with, and now Larry. And I'm thinking about even doing a podcast of brothers who have gone on beforehand and but left us such wonderful, great music, fantastic music.
Oh, that would be great. That
yeah.
would be amazing. Phil, the Master and the Musician 30th Anniversary Tour. Tell me about that.
Well, yeah, back in 78, I was recording in Schaumburg, Illinois, an album that became my debut instrumental album. And it was I came with some ideas and I put them down. I brought some musicians in. For flute and some keyboard stuff and some bits and pieces like that. It turned out to be a really nice album. And then 30 years later, we re-released it finally and remastered it.
There's a lot of people have been waiting for that.
Yeah, and it comes with a second disc full of bonus tracks, outtakes that weren't used in the album, alternate mixes, commentary, interviews, and it came out beautiful. And now we've got a band on the road in April and May, that is doing, articulating pretty much the whole album. There's cello, there's three guitarists, there's flute, keyboards, drums, percussion, bass, and there's seven of us on stage. And we try to duplicate the whole essence of the album, the arrangements, the guitars. I'm using an Olsen guitar, but I'm using also my Les Paul that I used on that album 30 years ago. And people are enjoying it. We did three concerts so far, Drew, and it was really a good response, good turnout, and we're looking forward to playing more concerts.
And you're still the king of the loop.
Well, you know, I won't be doing a whole lot of loops because who needs to do loops when you got a band? I think I do one or two, and that's it. And
yeah.
They're very short. That's to make a transition from an acoustic and picking up my electric and letting this little thing go.
Nice.
As I go into my little bagpipe section of Amazing Grace.
Oh, man. You're like the Dick Van Dyke of the Jesus music scene, you know? Remember that whole, you know, cymbals and accordion and everything else? No, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Oh, you're talking about Spike Jones?
No, Dick Van Dyke, Mary Poppins.
No kidding. Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
Someone also told me that
kind
I was
kind of an
like,
obscure reference there. Sorry about that.
Yeah. And now, who's that guy that would play the piano and could read his music upside down? Victor
Borg.
Borg, yeah.
Yeah.
I've had someone tell me, you know, you remind me of Victor Borg because I love to have fun on stage.
Yeah. Well, you are a consummate entertainer. You really are.
Oh, well, I work at it. I do whatever I can to amuse myself, don't I?
You know, 2 years ago when I was down in Nashville, Brian Duncan and I went up to some club upstairs. It was you and Mr. Butterfly Kisses guy. What's his name again?
Oh, Bob Carlisle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
That was a cool night, man.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that, sure.
You were having fun, like serious fun.
Oh, yeah, good. I'm glad you were there for that.
Yeah, it was great. Then we went out later, and Daryl Mansfield was trying out a new band down in Printer's Alley there, whatever it's called. And
oh, yeah.
It was quite a wild night, let me tell you.
Well, Daryl is another one of those California guys that can play the harp like nobody's business and sing.
Hey, have you come across a guy named Tommy Emmanuel?
Oh, yeah. I did a couple of those guitar all-star guitar night things, you know, and he totally impresses me. He's one of those guys that he just goes out there with a guitar and he makes all the sound without any electronics. He's fascinating, and everyone should listen to his music. He's really a great guitar player.
Tommy and I found each other when I was living in Australia, of course.
That's where
he's from originally, mm-hmm. and spent a lot of time at a club called The Basement in Sydney. And, of course, he's been on our show a couple of times in studio, and he visits Toronto every year. He's created quite a following up here.
Good.
Is he on Steve Vai's label, I think?
I bet he is, yeah. What's it called? Favored Nation?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, good for him. I'm glad he needs to be distributed far and wide.
Oh.
He's a really wonderful guy. And he's a brother, too. He's very, very nice.
He exudes more... dare I say this, because it's going to sound a bit like a bumper sticker, but he exudes more spirituality than a lot of Jesus people I know.
Yeah, because I think what he does is he connects with people. You could tell he enjoys sharing his gift.
Yeah.
And he enjoys communicating the love of God through his music. And when you meet him, he's a real, genuine person.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Have you come across Eric Johnson much? Because your styling... and his are very similar in many ways.
The closest Eric and I have gotten, I've seen him play live, and he sent me a signed postcard one time, and I played on an album, a guy named Rex Paul. Rex Schnelly is his official name, but his stage name, his artist name is Rex Paul.
Right.
And there's a piece called Hero Shuffle, and I did a solo on there. Rex plays a solo, and Eric Johnson plays a solo on that song. So we actually got to play on a recording together, which was nice. But he did his part in Texas. I did my part in Nashville. But still, it's fun to listen to. And one of my podcasts from last year, it's toward the beginning of the show, but I couldn't tell you which show it was.
You have quite a website, a lot of stuff happening on there. There's mm-hmm. tours going on, the Master and the Musician 30th anniversary tour. Mm-hmm. Of course, GMA Week is coming up April 19th to 24th, I think, something like that,
mm-hmm.
23rd.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, are you going to be doing much during GMA Week?
I don't know. I don't know what's planned for me, maybe some interviews. Maybe Holly will have a street-level night again. We'll see. Holly Benyuski at Street Level Artist Agency. She usually does a yearly thing, but we'll see.
Well, I look forward to looking you up. I'm going to take my wife down this year. And I mean, it's just a week to meet a lot of people because everyone happens to be in the same place. So we're going to get in a car and drive out to Kentucky and look at some horse farms and that kind of thing. So.
Oh, good.
Phil, you know, I asked Brian Duncan the same thing, so we'll close with this. If you had one last chance to have a chat with Larry Norman, what would you say?
Let's make that record that we talked about. That's what I'd say. Because I sure enjoyed his energy, and I sure enjoyed how musical he was. And I enjoyed the side of him that really loved to bring Jesus to you. You know, that was pretty special.
Fantastic. Phil Kagi on the Drew Marshall Show. I appreciate it, mate.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
PhilKagi.com is the website. You want to go to that. That's K-E-A-G-G-Y, PhilKagi.com. And, of course, Brian Duncan earlier in the show in this first half hour. Just a tribute to Larry Norman. At the end of the show, around 3:45, we are going to light up the airwaves here with a stellar recording we did a couple of years ago with Larry. He gave us so kindly a couple of hours. So we have a two-hour interview. Now, we're only going to play part one today and part two next week. This interview with Larry Norman, just done a couple of years ago. But boy, I mean, he talks about everything, absolutely everything, including his relationship with Randy Stonehill. Speaking of Randy Stonehill, Randy was unable to join us by phone today, but he did send us a bit of a tribute to Larry on paper. And I want to read this to you, folks. Of course, Larry Norman and Randy Stonehill, those names are synonymous, and they had quite an interesting and fascinating and dynamic relationship for many, many years. So I found this particular letter that he sent to us very, very interesting. I knew Larry Norman perhaps better than anyone, yet to this day I'm not sure that I really understood him completely. For as brilliant and insightful as Larry was, I'm not sure that he understood himself completely either. This issue became apparent in the way he consistently seemed to derail relationships throughout his life. Larry is the man who introduced me to Jesus. He led me to the door of eternal life, and for that singular, priceless gift, I am eternally in his debt. In my relationship with Larry, I experienced the beauty of brotherhood, the richness of creative collaboration, the mystery of human brokenness, and ultimately the overshadowing wings of God's all-encompassing grace. After 20 years of friction and distance between us that began around 1980, Larry and I realized that what united us in Christ was far greater than what had separated us in our personal frailty and pride. We worked together on the reissue of the Welcome to Paradise recording and talked and laughed together over the phone from our respective homes in Seal Beach, California and Salem, Oregon. We stood together on stage for what would be the last time at the Cornerstone Festival in July of 2001, and it felt to me like being home. And then he disappeared into the mist. I wrote it off to the busy pace of life and his consuming health problems, but I still couldn't help but scratch my chin and wonder. He graciously agreed to sing with me on my song, We Were All So Young, for the Edge of the World project in 2003. We accomplished that performance process long distance through computer technology, and then he was silent again. I had hoped that in these last years we might continue to build on our recent reconciliation and even get together for some songwriting and recording, sharing what we had learned about life and about our craft to offer something better than ever to the world. Death is so final. We're out of time, at least in this life. No more conversations, no more plans, no more songs. It's a strange sorrow that leaves you feeling hollow, like someone knocked the wind out of you. The light of hope, however, that lifts my spirit is the knowledge that Larry's profound contribution to the work of God's kingdom is eternal, and that his struggles with his own demons finally over. Randy Stonehill, February 25th, 2008. If you go online, you will see lots and lots of tributes to Larry Norman. There are many people who are just pouring into his website, so many comments. The website, of course, is LarryNorman.com. I think we'll take a short break on our show at this point and introduce you to one more of Larry's songs. And again, later in the show, about 3:45, we will air the first part of our two-part, two-hour interview with the godfather of Christian rock, Larry Norman. Mm-hmm.
trampled on the floor. I wish we'd all been ready. Children died, the days grew cold. A piece of bread could buy a bag of gold. I wish we'd all been ready. There's no time to change your mind. The sun has come and you've been left behind. A man and wife asleep in bed. She hears a noise and turns her head. He's gone. I wish we'd all been ready. Two men walking up a hill. One disappears and one's left standing still. I wish we'd all been ready. There's no time to change your mind. The sun has come and you've been left behind. You've been left behind.